Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Should become public only if he decides to make it public. He can say whatever he wants, but
what do you think?
Here's what I'll say is I've been keeping the first lady waiting for about half an hour, so I'm going to take off.
I don't want to make her mad. Please go.
You're in good hands, and Gibbs will call last question.
Yeah, help me. Thank you.
Baby, baby, how I want you. Baby, baby, how I need you. Baby, baby, you're the only.
Unprecedented. I have never, in all of my years of watching politics, seen this type of maneuver that I saw today. I was eating a takeout Japanese lunch, okay, watching the news as I like to do. I don't like going out. And I'm watching this press conference, and I see Obama standing there like some kind of like intern on the right side. And there's Bill Clinton. He's the president again. And incidentally, he's holding forth, he's holding down the stage, looking very good. It actually made me feel good about America for the first time in 12 years. He looked more presidential than Bush. And he's speaking rationally about how good the tax cut extensions are. Because Bill Clinton has become a rich man since he's left office, and he associates naturally with very wealthy men. So he finally understands that all of that, let us say, rhetoric that he engaged in as an early, younger man has no relevance in the real world, particularly at a time like this. So he's a fiscal conservative. And there's Mr. Obama standing there like smiling and on the side. And someone asks him a question. He says, I got to leave now. I got to go to a party. Goodbye. So the first word that came to my mind was abdicate. President Obama has abdicated to give up as a throne, formally abdication. Abdication. It's as though he abdicated his responsibilities for sure, but it's almost as though he's given up as president. Am I the first one who has seen this? No. I'm not the first one to have commented on it. Perhaps this afternoon or early evening in radio, you haven't even heard about it. But this is an unprecedented situation. I believe in presidential politics. In my lifetime, I've never seen anything like it. The president hands off answering questions about his responsibilities today. Because Michelle is waiting at a party? This is the best the liberals can produce? He can't even face the press anymore? And we watch the complete meltdown of the far left. Not only are they not governing anymore, they're not even sticking around to lead. They don't even have the guts to stick it out. Never mind fighting. They can't even put up a front. And this is why we're losing around the world. This is why the radical Islamists are basically laughing at us. It's how China ate our lunch. It's because what Obama did today is representative of what the so-called leadership on the left has been doing for too long right now. By his actions, Obama has said, I am over my head. I can't take it anymore. And he looked like an apprentice. Now, so I'm going to raise a question. You can comment on Bill Clinton today if you saw it. We're going to play some of the more of the sound because this is historic, by the way. It's historic. And I think that you have to ask yourself only one question, because I think I'm the first one to ask this. I haven't seen it on any website. I haven't read about it, heard about it, seen it. This is one man's opinion. Admittedly, I have the best analytical mind in the business of talk radio in history. But here's what I'm seeing. Bill Clinton is running for the presidency in 2012. Hillary just last week said she's not interested. This is the last public office she will hold. Okay. We know that Obama is fundamentally finished. He can't run again. He's lost. He lost the center during the first year for reasons I don't have to explain. I explained them in trickle up poverty. He's now lost the left wing, thank God, because he's not radical enough. Now, I know that the 22nd Amendment says only two elected terms for president, but I also know the law is an ass. I also know that the great English essayist Samuel Johnson said the law is an ass. And believe me, I know the law is an ass. Laws are written to be broken, number one, and laws are written to be gotten around, number two. And never forget that laws are written by lawyers who are all, let us say, pretty crafty at interpretation. So if the 22nd Amendment says a president can only run for two terms, does it say consecutively? Or can it be interpreted to mean only two terms consecutively, period, and then come back? Because we have a governor here in California who was a governor. Then he disappeared, and I think he ran an ashram somewhere or whatever, and he was attorney general. Now he's governor again. Good luck to him. I have no idea why he wanted it. So there is a precedent for an old-timer to leave the stage and then come back. And I'm going to tell you something else. I mean, I've been watching the news for so long that, you know, you become blurred to it and inured to it. It doesn't mean anything. One speech after another. Watching Bill Clinton, I actually felt confident in America again. I felt somebody was in charge. It doesn't mean I would agree with him on any social policies. I don't even know where he stands socially anymore. I think he's become quite conservative by what I can imagine with the individuals he's traveling in the circles of billionaires that he travels with. I don't think too many of them are radical liberals. Well, maybe Soros, and I don't know how close they are. Sure, they're globalists, etc. But I got the feeling there was somebody who knew how to run a country. You know, but he made some points that were interesting to me and something you should never forget. He was telling the left wing they have to compromise. He was telling the Democrats they have to compromise. He was telling the Republicans that they have to compromise. He was telling them what any man who's been in business knows. Nobody gets 100% of what they want. Nobody gets 100% of what they want. I mean, play the Rolling Stones. You can't always get what you want. Haven't you found that to be in your life true? Well, haven't you found that to be true in your life? Whichever way you want to say it. Haven't you found that to be true in your life? Nobody gets 100% of what they want. Haven't you compromised in order to survive? You buy a house, it's not exactly what you wanted. It's too close to the sun, it's not close enough to the sun. The back of the house gets the southern exposure when you really wanted the front of the house to get the southern exposure. You don't want the sun in the front at the end of the day, you want the sun in the back at the front of the day. But on the other hand, it has a view of the bay, so you took the house because although the sun falls on the wrong side of the house at the right time of the day, you get a view of the bay all of the day, so that's good. That's a compromise. Marriage, compromise. Compromise. On and on and on. Everything is a compromise, whether it's legal or otherwise. So Bill Clinton said compromise to his left-wing base. You follow me? What do you think? Do you think that Bill Clinton has announced fundamentally that he's in charge and he's going to run for the presidency again? 1-800-449-8255. How do you feel about Barack Obama showing himself to be incapable of taking pressure and walking off the stage during this press conference today? Number three. Do you think that Michelle's party will be bigger news than this event by tonight's news spin? Number four, is there a question that you have on this issue because you don't even understand what I'm talking about? 1-800-449-8255. Let's take some callers. New York, WOR. Leeshawn Leeson, welcome to the show. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Savage. I'm just a little annoyed because I don't understand why you constantly have to insult former President Bush. I think he was a good president, and I think that you don't cut him enough slack. And I think that a lot.
Well, I think he did wear nice Republican slacks. I agree with you on that account.
Savage, what about the 2 million?
He's nothing but a check-pants country club Rockefeller Republican, a compromiser and a phony through and through. The man expanded the government more. He expanded the government more so than his previous four presidents. Are you aware of any of that? Or you have taken the Kool-Aid so long from Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, you know what the hell you're talking about?
First,
do you understand what he did? Did you understand what he did to this country, George Bush? He got us into a war that's still going on in Iraq, and he didn't win it. He made Iran, you know, you'll be listening to me. He made Iran much stronger, number two. Number three, he expanded government to an extent that we can't even come out from under the size of the government he built up. So how can you say those are good policies?
First of all, I think that some of his policies were good, and I think that you're twisting it in a different way. I think that I...
Wait, Alicia, hold on. If you're gonna play dummy with me, I'm not your former husband who ran away because of your insanity and your inability to hold an argument. I just gave you four reasons he was a terrible president. And again, you're going back to generalities. Okay, let's start with the size of government. So you're a big government Republican. Is that what you are? You think that George Bush's expansion of government was a good thing?
No, I don't. I'm not saying that George Bush's expansion of government was all a good thing. No, it was not. But I think
Hold on. So now you're getting now you're focusing a little. Was his passage of No Child Left Behind, was that a good thing?
No.
Why wasn't it a good thing? But why wasn't?
What I'm saying is that, first of all, that...
No. Please don't go back to your righteous indignation, because it's not going to get you anywhere. How about his opening the border with Mexico and not enforcing the border and letting the illegals run all over the country? Was that a good thing?
What about the fact that Iraq was...
You see, you won't answer a question. How can you have a discussion? Was it a good thing for a so-called Republican, George Bush, to leave the borders with Mexico wide open and fundamentally not enforce immigration laws?
Well, how about Bill Clinton letting them bomb all those embassies?
You're changing the subject. You came here to defend Bush because fundamentally you're brainwashed, because you listened too long to an uneducated dolt like Rush Limbaugh, and you start to think that George Bush was actually a good president. But if you actually analyze what Bush did, you see that he was one of the worst presidents in American history.
Did you read his book? Did you read Bush?
Are you kidding? I lived through 8 years of his reign of stupidity. What do I need to read his book for? Have you read Trickle Up Poverty?
Fresh perspective. Maybe you'll be able
I said, have you read Trickle Up Poverty, yes or no?
I did read Trickle Up Poverty, and I loved it. And I love you, Sally.
All right, then you're getting another free copy. You know, as my dad used to have a sign in his little market, you know what it said? Don't go away mad, just go away, and I shall return.
Savage.
Sometimes you might find you get what you need.
The agreement taken as a whole is, I believe, the best bipartisan agreement we can reach to help the largest number of Americans and to maximize the chances that the economic recovery will accelerate and create more jobs, and to minimize the chances that it will slip back.
I was standing in line with Mr. Jimmy.
It is the craziest, you know, the Greeks said, the ancient Greeks, not the current broke Greeks, the ancient Greeks who wore white robes, the philosophers of the time said that it's good to live in interesting times. We are sure living in interesting times. Here we have a president fundamentally looking like he was a scared rabbit running off the stage, leaving it to Bill Clinton to continue the discussion as to why he wanted the compromise with the Republicans and extending the Bush-era tax cuts, which makes Bill Clinton now a fiscal conservative. I don't think you understood what I was saying to you. Bill Clinton is now stepping forward as the face of the Democrat Party, and he's showing himself to be a fiscal conservative, meaning he's a rationalist now. If you actually listen to what Bill Clinton said, which I did, he said he just came back from Asia and they went through the same kind of downturn as we're having now. And the number one thing that seemed to save their economy was putting out some of the tax credits and et cetera. So he said the same thing, the payroll tax credit reduction. This is the opposite of what Obama was advised to do by his far left Goonie Bird squad, who all teach at universities and have never worked a day in their life. They have no idea what makes a country run economically. All they do is spout stupid, you know, 10th-rate sophomoric Marxist rhetoric, and they think that passes for running and building and running a business. It doesn't work that way. But Bill Clinton, as I said, has since left office, he's made a fortune. He's invested probably the fortune, and he's advised by billionaires who own major enterprises who advise him what needs to be done. He said the tax agreement is the best thing that could be done. Listen to clip 15. Would you please listen? Please.
The agreement 15. Taken as a whole is, I believe, the best bipartisan agreement we can reach to help the largest number of Americans and to maximize the chances that the economic recovery will accelerate and create more jobs and to minimize the chances that it will slip back.
So how can you disagree with it? Now you want to hate him? Just see, I don't think you people understand something. Let me take it. First of all, the art of the deal is the compromise, as Donald Trump said, something like that. But we've all learned that in our own life. That's number one. Here's Bill Clinton coming out and fundamentally saying, we Democrats, you know, lost in the election. He said that as well. He said, what is, meaning the election is the election. We lost almost 70 seats. We got the message. We may not like it, but that's what the people said. That's number one. We don't want, they don't want far left rhetoric or policies of the type that Obama's been spouting and pushing forward. That's number two. So he says the best we could do, it's also the best thing we can do for the country. Now, how could you disagree with him when he agrees with you on a fiscally conservative basis? What, because you don't like what he did when he was president? I don't like many of the things he did when he was president. So let's start with that. But this is another time. We're in dangerous times. So he's now the face of the Democrat Party. He stepped forward as the leader. There is nobody else. Who else can come forward and save us from Obama, who looks like what he is? It is what he is. Obama is an inexperienced Marxist front man for God knows who. As I spell out in my book, I think it's certain individuals who escaped Romania. Let's start with that. And some of their cohorts who hate America and hate democracy and want to turn us all into serfs. Okay, so I spelled it all out in Trickle Up Poverty. I don't have to spell it out for you again. We know this. And now you see that when push comes to shove, anywhere you want to put it, when the rubber hits the road, he's not there. He skidded away to go to a party. It's everything that you have feared about Obama and more. He's always running away, leaving town, leaving the country. He's incapable of real criticism and real pressure. Why? Well, that's a psychological question. And I don't want to go into it again, nor do I want to be too comedic in the political arena this afternoon, because I think we're dealing with a very serious problem right now. Because I got to tell you something. Yeah, I'm for the tax cuts. I mean, the extension of the tax deal that Bush put out. Because I told you, I've worked all my life. I don't want to give the government any more of my money. I'd rather either hire somebody new, or I would rather give some to charity. I'd rather give it away than have some idiot in Washington decide to pave a road to nowhere that goes to Nancy Pelosi's ravioli kitchen. Okay, I don't want another road going to Nancy's cannoli kitchen. That's all. I'll give it to an animal fund. I'll give it to an elephant fund instead of giving it to Aunt Sam. So there it is. So that's a good thing, the extension. But who's going to pay for it? Now they're extending unemployment benefits too? Who's paying for this? Insanity. Fiscal insanity.
Savage.
Some of your fellow Democrats are saying that the president just didn't go in and fight hard enough for his core principles, that he caved in. Has he let the party down?
You know, I just respectfully disagree about that. I think that a lot of them are hurting now, and I get it. And, you know, I did 133 events for them. I believe the Congress in the last 2 years did a far better job than the American people thought they did, at least the American people that voted in the midterms. But we had an election. The results are what they are.
So he's back. He's back. Hillary's out of the picture. She was neutralized by the Obama team, who released the WikiLeaks tapes through the stooge Assange. That made Hillary, she was the big loser in that. I keep telling you, if you had to name one politician who lost most from the WikiLeaks scandal, it's Hillary Clinton. So you can only guess who was behind the leak. I mean, the government couldn't have caught him before he leaked them. Suddenly, if they found him in England after the fact. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, there's no one to run against the Republican in the Democrat Party. Howard Dean's going to run? Okay, no. Who do they have? Nobody. They're finished as a party. So who are they digging for now? Somebody who once had America in his grip. Now, admittedly, the man was impeached and was let to slip out the back door by the check pants Republicans. And so, therefore, he has resuscitated his political life to a great extent. And here he is now rescuing the Democrat Party and saying the deal that they just made with the Republicans is a good deal. But the big news is not so much what Clinton did as what Obama did not do. Obama did not stand up for anything. He left for a party. It's amazing to me. And there are those in his inner circle who are saying, where is he? They don't know where he is. He's not around. The guy is spacing out. He can't take the pressure. Now, why is this happening? Well, Obama was never equipped for the presidency. This is probably the toughest, it is the toughest job in the universe. There's no tougher job in the world. Let us start with that. I could not do it. I'm not asking you to, I don't want to run. That's not the point. I couldn't do a job like that. I couldn't be a governor. I couldn't take that kind of daily pressure and all of the compromises that need to be made and the fundraising and the public scrutiny. And no, I want to take a nap in the afternoon. That's going to be on the evening news that I took a nap or I didn't go to church or I didn't go to synagogue or I didn't do this or I ate a hamburger. I don't want people doing so. Let's start with the fact that it's a job for very special people, and they have to be psychologically very unique. Let me put it to you that way. That's a pleasant way of saying they have to be slightly crazy. Anybody who would want that kind of pressure on them has to be nuts. Their ego has to be beyond anything I could comprehend. Their narcissism has to be anything much greater than anything I can conceptualize. Their desire for absolute power has to be something beyond anything I could ever grasp, because none of those things matter to me to any extent. I love my show. I like to write books and I want to be left alone. I don't give speeches. Personally, I'm just telling you about me for the minute and I'll get back to the politics. How else can I relate to anything except through myself? I am a public figure. I'm a very successful broadcaster and author. However, I am now commenting on public officials. So, of course, there's going to be a time in which I blur my own feelings or emotions into my discussion of a president or a senator, saying this or that about them, because I'm projecting how I see it from my point of view. It is not necessarily from your point of view. So now we see Obama's not equipped for the office. We knew this from day one. We knew he was not made for the job. They took a green president, a green senator, with almost no management experience, and they made him president. They literally made him president the way Arnold Rothstein fixed the 1919 World Series, or was it 1918? Something didn't make sense from the top to the bottom. Of course, with the Republicans wanting to lose, it was pretty much a slam dunk since McCain threw the election by selecting Palin number one. That was the first blow. And number two, not going for the jugular in the debate with Obama. The final debate with Obama by McCain, he could have won. All he had to say was with a smile, and I said it on the show then. Remember those of you listening to me now for many years? Don't you remember what I said? In the final debate against Obama, I told McCain, here's a line I created for you, Senator. When the senator gets up there, then Senator Obama, with his ideas for the presidency, smile like Reagan, say, we've heard it all before, Senator, and it's all, and that is called trickle-up poverty. No one heard me. Maybe my listeners heard me. McCain certainly didn't hear it because he was run by Democrat advisors who ran him off the rails. I don't even think McCain knows he was a fall guy. So instead he gets up there. Every time he could have been tough, he was weak, blah, blah, blah. And so Obama wins because McCain was told to lose. And not in so many words. McCain was a fall guy for the powers that be, the oligarchy, didn't want the Republicans. They had 8 years already of sacking the Treasury. So they figured, okay, now it's time for the other party to sack the Treasury for 8 years. So let's see, how do we do it? We run an old war horse who doesn't even know what he is, and we'll tell him what to say to lose. And we'll get someone on the other side. Now, whether they knew it would be Obama, I don't know. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Maybe a fluke was thrown at them by Soros et al. So we have Obama. But the guy wasn't ready for prime time. And you could see it. Not only did he lose the, he lost the center. He won the center to win the election, and he did so because the Republicans threw the center in the garbage. They kicked them in the shins over and over again, and they're doing it again, by the way. The same K Street gang is back in power. Every old line lobbyist that you hated under Bush is now back in the same job under Boehner. You don't know any of this yet because you're brainwashed listening to the golfer and the wall banger. But you'll soon find out I'm right again. Very soon you'll come to understand it. Anyway, so now Obama wins, and the guy can't do the job. And the reason he's not used to this pressure, because I've said this to you before, in my analysis, one man's opinion, just a guy with a microphone with no power whatsoever, little old Michael Savage sitting alone in a radio studio, nobody knows he exists. The reason he can't do take the heat is because his whole life, the skids were greased for him. He was a child of mixed parentage from a racial point of view. That is a well-established fact. And it worked for him his entire life. The guilty, rich, white liberals of his youth bent over backwards, paved the way for him, greased the skids from whatever you want to say. He never faced criticism of any kind. And his kindly grandmother raised him. She sacrificed for him. I doubt very much that he had to get into the hard scrabble life in order to get where he is. I don't think he held down jobs even like I did, frankly, to get where he is. I'm pretty sure he didn't. By his own admission, he didn't. And if you read Trickle Up Poverty, you'll find that he hung around with pretty rich kids in college, even up to Columbia. He was still hanging around with rich kids because he liked the trappings of that life. Who doesn't? So he didn't really have that hard a life. He had a very easy life. The skids were greased. No one criticized them. The university professors, as you well know, bowed down to him for a number of reasons, which I've already spelled out. I don't have to beat it up. You can figure it out. And so, therefore, he was not ready for this kind of intense pressure, heat, and fighting that you get in the kind of political position that he's in. Here he is. So now he hits rough water after destroying the center that voted for him. He destroys it by listening to the lunatic Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, the two lunatics. He pushes through the health care bill, which will likely be overturned because it's so monstrous, it's socialistic, it's illegal, and the American people didn't want it. Every poll was saying, don't push it, don't push it. And there was Pelosi, the maniac. I whip in the morning, I whip in the afternoon, I whip in the afternoon. Screw you, let them eat cake. And she's running around with a big hammer. A big hammer. Couldn't be a worse metaphor for this woman. So by the time they push through Obamacare, the entire center has left him. Blew it away. That's year one. Now let's go into year two. Year two? Obama's year two? Now he's blown off the entire left wing. He's basically complained, put them down, told them they're no good. So now he's blown off the center and he's blown off his base. So who's left? Well, okay, I'll leave it to you to figure out who's still left there. The people who are fundamentally left out of reality are still left with Obama. No one's left. So the Democrat Party knows what happened in October, and they realize that the party is imploded. They recognize there's no center, there's no left, there's nothing left in the party. So who do they wheel out? They wheel out Bill Clinton, who, despite all of the problems he brought upon the presidency, he was still a very popular figure. He has resuscitated his image over the years with this, with that, ba-ba, ba-boo, ba-bing, ba-bung, and now he's out there sounding like a fiscal conservative. So, ladies and gentlemen, I just gave you an analysis of what happened today. Where it goes tomorrow is anybody's guess. And now, of course, the idiots start calling me a Democrat, a communist, and a liberal. So let's start with the first one in New York on WOR. Rich, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I'm in shock. How can you talk about Clinton this way?
Here we go. See, idiot one. Here it is. Did you not hear a word I just said? Excuse me, sir. Did you not hear a word I just said?
You said it in your book. He's fronting for the Council of Foreign Relations and the bill.
Did you hear what I just said about Bill Clinton's act today? Yes or no?
He's a disgrace.
What Bill Clinton says or does, he's wrong.
He's an absolute disgrace. He should.
So you mean even if Bill Clinton, if you agree with this, any policy he presents, he's still wrong. So you disagree with yourself then.
What happened with the coal? What happened when the coal got attacked? He didn't do anything.
Rich, slow down. You didn't hear me again. You don't hear me. Politics is about compromise. Politics makes strange bedfellows. Now, Rich, were you listening to me as a talk show host during the Dubai port steal?
Of course, sir. I'm a loyal listener, sir.
All right, so listen carefully. Do you remember who I had on this show who supported me 100%? Charles Schumer. Had I ever agreed with anything Schumer had done prior to that? Answer, no. Have I ever agreed with anything Schumer has done since that? No. But when I had Schumer on, it's because we joined together. I reached out to any politician of a major level I could find to stop the Dubai ports deal, which, by the way, George Bush was pushing. Do you know that, Rich?
Sir, I like it better when you bash these guys. I don't like you praising them.
Are you aware that George Bush was the man behind the Dubai ports deal? I had a caller earlier who thought he was such a great president. I can guarantee you Wallbanger and the golfer don't mention the Dubai ports deal where George Bush tried to sell our national security down the drain. They all forgot that, listening to the two Pied Pipers there. Rich, I don't want you to go away because I think you're a nice guy and you listen, but I don't think you really heard me today. Please accept my gift to you today of trickle-up poverty. 1-800. Yes, thank you for the call. I knew this would happen. They don't hear a word you say, but that's all I can say to you is that politics makes strange bedfellows. In other words, I am not a politician. How many times have I said to you, we in talk radio who have a large audience, of whom there are probably 5 to 6 of us, maybe 7, we are what the British used to call ministers without portfolio. I believe it's an apt description of who we really are politically. You could say that we are. We have enormous influence, but not any direct vote. That's who we are. We're opinion makers. We're opinion shapers. So make no mistake about it. I don't care whether you want to accept it or not. Okay? We are opinion makers. And in doing so, we have to be rational. You know, I can engage in the sound and fury better than anybody in the business when I want to. I can entertain, I can have a good time, etc. But you know, when it comes down to very serious business, we have to make sure that we save this country. If we have to reach out to a Bill Clinton to save the country on this issue, we do so. And we say you did the right thing. I don't understand why that's so hard for the average person to understand. Because then you're becoming like the Taliban on the left who are on MSNBC, who every time a Republican says something, even if they agree with him, they say he's no good and the position is no good, even though they may have taken the same position the day before themselves. You can't let yourself become so irrational. Politics makes strange bedfellows. So here it is Friday. It's late already on the East Coast, you know. It's late afternoon on the West Coast. And here we are. We're talking about a cataclysm that occurred today, political cataclysm. I don't know if it will be played this way by the evening Schmendrix on the news. I doubt it. The evening Schmeck won't play it the proper way because the evening Schmeck will still protect Obama. But I will tell you what happened today is unprecedented. A sitting president abdicated during a press conference, turning it over to a former president. If anyone knows of a similar situation in their lifetime, correct me, because I don't think I'm wrong, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Welcome back to the program. We're talking about the abdication of the presidency, at least for this afternoon, by President Obama, and the assumption of that mantle by Bill Clinton. I want to divert for a second and talk about a 100-year-old man who died yesterday or the day before. Let us put it this way. All of us dream of living a long, productive life and living to the age of 100 and dying sort of without pain and having a special life. This man was the father of a friend of mine. I never met him. But when I heard the man's life, what it was like, I had to say, you know, I got to tell the audience about it because it's so inspiring that a man can live to 100. Not only just live to 100, the man was a prodigy as a violinist. He was a college professor of music. He had been an athlete, a basketball player and a baseball player as a youth. The man had been married to the same woman for 64 years, I learned, by the way. And when she died 8 years ago, he was 92 years old. And he kind of felt he didn't want to go on any longer. But his son said, "Dad, you're loved by your community. You have a wonderful life. Don't give up." And the man remarried at age 92. 92, and he just passed away. It's a remarkable story, and I only know so little about him. But I thought I would tell you about this. Have you ever heard of a man whose wife of 64 years dies at 91? And he feels there's no more life left in him. But when he realizes he had great health, a family, and a community that loved him, he decides to go on. And then 1 year later, at age 92, he gets married again, and his son is his best man. I am talking about a remarkable man who you will hear more about next week. His name is Murray Bernthal. He passed away in the last few days. The man was born April 15th, 1911, to first-generation immigrant parents. Immigrant parents. His mother came from Odessa and his father from a small village in what is now Romania. They settled in Brooklyn, New York, where his father started a little business decorating china. They had 4 children, but this man Murray was a child prodigy violinist. Now I want you to listen to this one line. Here's how long ago this was. When Murray Bernthal was a child, He was taught by the most famous violin teacher of the day named Leopold Auer. Never heard of him. Leopold Auer at that time was a very, very old man. Do you know who Leopold Auer's teacher had been? Johann Brahms. Johann Brahms. Now, I will tell you more about it another day, but the man played basketball on a half basketball, half violin scholarship to, Syracuse University. And he was joined the faculty at age 19, the youngest music instructor in the university's history. Continued to teach at Syracuse for 45 years. Now listen to this love story. One of the students in the music department was another child prodigy violinist named Rose Watsky. Rose had come to Syracuse in 1936 at the age of 14. She entered college at 14. You hear this? She was voted the campus beauty queen the next year, studied violin. Murray and Rose married in 1938. They were married for 64 years. During the Depression, many of you don't have work, right? You're afraid, oh, I can't go on. There was a Depression. During the Depression, Murray could not support himself on a music teacher salary. He joined a semi-professional baseball team and played throughout the small towns in upstate New York to earn money. You hear all of this? I mean, do you understand this? He also played tennis professionally, going from resort to resort in the Borscht Belt in the Catskill Mountains, challenging the local pros for money and winning. Played concerts everywhere. So, as I say to you, if you feel like giving up, how about listening to this story and thinking about it? There's a lot more life left in you. You're not the first one to face a downturn in the economy, and you're not the first one who has to scramble around for a buck. And don't give up, because life is endless, and you have endless choices and endless opportunities. So let's take our hats off to Murray Bernthal, who lived to the ripe old age of 100.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Should become public only if he decides to make it public. He can say whatever he wants, but
what do you think?
Here's what I'll say is I've been keeping the first lady waiting for about half an hour, so I'm going to take off.
I don't want to make her mad. Please go.
You're in good hands, and Gibbs will call last question.
Yeah, help me. Thank you.
I really can't
but
stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
Well, what happened today is unprecedented, so far as I know. We had a president abdicate his own press conference for a former president. President Obama exited stage left, where he entered, and ran off to another party. No doubt he'll be leaving on another trip shortly. But the interesting thing is that Bill Clinton not only looked presidential, it was amazing to watch the press go on with Mr. President. It was not, I want to use the word deja vu, you know, deja vu, because it would be too obvious, but I just used it. But it's nice. What's this now? Clinton's president again? Mr. President this, Mr. President that. Now, of course, that's the proper, you know, it's like when they talk to a former secretary of state or attorney general, they call him general, whatever. There are titles. All right, so he is Mr. President, I guess, forever. Fine, he was president. But it was shocking. And he comes out as a fiscal conservative. Clinton, that is. Obama ran off like a scared college teacher who was over his head. Couldn't handle it. You know, it was embarrassing, actually, for me as an American to watch this, because I felt as though the guy was so over his head and frightened and didn't know what to do. He almost looked helpless. I'm the kind of guy who doesn't like to see a man helpless, incidentally. I don't know if you know that about me. You have the wrong impression of me if you think otherwise. As a kid, when I get into scrabbles with other kids, it's a funny thing. If I get the better of them, and they'd start to cry or cower and put their hands up from the ground, which wasn't too often, but if it happened, I would never bash them in the face. I felt bad for them. I never liked seeing a strong man cry. I didn't like seeing a strong man beg. I didn't like seeing a strong man weak. I don't know. Perhaps it's my own weakness. I think it's more or less something else. I think it's called compassion, something that's sorely lacking in the world today. But nevertheless, forget about me for the minute. I felt bad for Obama because he didn't look like he could handle his job another second, let alone the rest of his term. So now here comes Clinton. Why? Why Clinton? Isn't there a vice president named Biden? Where'd he go? What, they run out of squirt guns in Bethesda? Where is Biden? Am I the first person to say, if the president himself couldn't handle it, where was the vice president to step up? You haven't heard from Biden, have you? Did you notice something I just said? Did you just catch that little fastball I threw at you? It's not even a slider. It's right down the center. I just threw you a fastball. You didn't even see it go by. It was so fast. Am I the first person in the media to ask, where is Biden? Because naturally, he's the next man in the line of succession. And where is he? Even if the president didn't leave the job, which he didn't do, obviously, he stepped off the stage. So the next guy to step up should have been Biden. No, it wasn't Biden. It was Bill Clinton. So you have to start asking where and why did they reach into the past and bring in Bill Clinton? Well, it's pretty obvious why. Because the radical left has abandoned Obama. They have fractured. They lost the center last year. This year, they've just lost the left. So Bill Clinton, who is still very popular with the center and the left of the Democrat side, came back in order to save what was left of the mess that Obama, Pelosi, and Reid have made of the Democrat Party. So they brought him back, figuring he could soothe their wounds and try to calm them down and bring them back into the fold. I don't know whether he has achieved that. I doubt it, because they're irrational. The left is irrational to begin with, as you can see how they're behaving in England. They're part and parcel of the same anarchist streak in the Democrat Party, which is, they say they're going to raise college tuition in England, so the left goes crazy. They burn, they break, they attack, they poke a stick through the Rolls-Royce window of Camille or whatever, and they poke her in the ribs. It shows you how defenseless the Brits really are, what shape they're in today. And who did this in England? The leftist maniac anarchists. And who? Were they all poor? Do you think they were all poor? Well, one of them who was arrested was a rich boy who's the son of the Pink Floyd rock group. A rich boy who goes to Cambridge. Why was he rioting? He said he lost his head, didn't know what he was doing, has no idea why he did it, didn't know why he climbed up, didn't know why he swung from a Union Jack, had no idea why he rioted, because liberalism is a mental disorder. That's number one. But the point is, we have the same brats here in America. You know, raise college tuition, suddenly they stop snorting whatever they're snorting and taking the ecstasy and having sex, and then now they're in the mode of, oh, let's go to the pavement together. Let's bring it all down, man, okay? So here it is. And they're the same radical crazy left that he has to now deal with. That is, Bill Clinton is now trying to deal with it. 1-800-449-8255. If you have comments about this astonishing abdication where the president runs off from a press conference, I'd like to hear from you on the Savage Nation. Let's start again with some of the callers, and please don't confuse me with someone I am not, and start making accusations because I say Bill Clinton did the right thing. He did the right thing. Just as I told you, Charles Schumer did the right thing in helping me stop the Dubai ports deal. Now, I have to go back on that for a minute, because many of you are now going through a brainwashing because Bush is on a book tour and because of the two front men from the water carriers and radio in the morning and the afternoon, the two water carriers for the Repub Party, that is Wallbanger and the golfer, are making you think Bush is something different than he was. Bush was behind the Dubai ports deal. It was Bush who wanted his buds in the UAE to get control of 11 of our ports and their security. I stopped it, which, by the way, I stopped it with the help of guys like thousands of you email. I don't know if you remember what went on. I grabbed on that story. I ran with it. I made it an issue. You emailed, you called, and you stopped it. It was like the first big electronic tea party in this country. Yes, that's right. Michael Savage, that's right, was the first had the first electronic tea party or the first town hall meeting that worked, and we stopped the Dubai ports deal. But I needed Charles Schumer at the time, don't you remember? And I had him on the show. Now, as a side note, I believe that I was put on the list of murderers and terrorists in England, and I'm banned from entering that fabulous country because of people within the Bush administration, not within the Clinton administration, not within the Obama administration. First of all, it occurred during the Bush administration. That's number one. And I believe it was payback from the people in the United Arab Republic, UAE, who were so shocked that Bush couldn't pull this off. So before you start glorifying how great Bush was, kindly remember some of the things this man did and did not do. The Dubai ports deal, you don't hear much about it anymore. You're certainly not going to get it from the hole-in-one crowd. Number two, the man built the government up to a larger extent than the previous three administrations did. Big government, Bush, that you forgot about also. No child left behind, you forgot about that. The disaster he left for you to deal with. So Bush was a terrible president. There's nothing he did that was right other than invade Iraq. The only problem is he didn't finish the job. That's all. You want me to go back one more step? Give me 30 seconds. I'll go back one more step. Right after 9/11, of course, Bush wasn't president at the time. Wait a minute, was he? Yeah, he was president. Sure, he was a president. Right after 9/11, when he was sitting in the child's chair in the elementary school in Florida and looked as shaken as Obama did today, that's right, memory of an elephant, Bush looked about as fit for the job then in that little chair in the elementary school as Obama did today. Look, every man has its limits. I know it has its limits. I know I do. There are days I can't take this job. I take the day off. They can't take the day off, can they? There are days I can't handle this. I don't have the ability to get up here and be cogent and project the force I need to project with the intelligence I need to use, blah, 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 so I don't come on the air. I need a rest or my voice is shot. I can't do it. They can't do that. They can. I guess they can go to something else. But the fact is that Bush ran away that day, too, at 9/11 with the child's chair and the Air Force in the air for a few hours. Remember that? But if you remember what I said on the radio right after that, when they traced it to Osama bin Laden, and they said he was hiding in the Tora Bora Mountains, you don't remember what I said? Do you remember what I said? I wasn't in any position of power, but no one listened to me. It's one man's opinion, but I'm a reasonably intelligent man. I said, if he's hiding in the Tora Bora Mountains, what you do is you bring in drilling equipment from Texas, and you drill a bore into the top of the mountain. I don't care how far down you have to go. I mean, they did do underground nuclear testing for a long period of time, if you get the drift. And they dug very deep tunnels, the same way they dig oil wells. You dig a very deep tunnel. You drill down from the mountaintop, and then you lower a nuclear device into the mountain, and then you cover up that hole, and then you detonate that nuclear weapon, and you collapse the mountain, and you kill the ants inside the hive. Did anyone listen to me? No. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I've not seen or witnessed evidence of any smoking in probably 9 months. I mean, I think you've heard him say this. This is not something that he's proud of. He knows that it's not good for him.
No,
he knows he doesn't like it. He doesn't like children to know about it, obviously, including his.
He knows when you've been good or bad, so be good for goodness sake. So there's the White House press secretary on Obama's smoking habit. It's something he's not proud of. All right, he's a human being. We all have things we're not proud of. But that's a bigger issue than him walking off the stage. And why? Why? Did anyone hear my eulogy to the 100-year-old man? We didn't get one call on that. It's an astonishing life story. I never heard of a story like that. I'm not a real story. It's worthy of a movie, but they won't make it because it's too positive. Why would Hollywood, why would the sickos of Hollywood make a movie about a man who did everything right his whole life, lived to 100, did the right thing, and built a beautiful life with four children? Why would you want to do a movie about that when you could do one about a pervert who lied down with an elephant and wound up? It's crazy. Today is Friday, and I promise you that this was the new format time of year. It would be not politics so much, but we have to do politics today. But I have to do one piece of religion for the people who believe in religion. And I do in and out. I go in and out of it. I want to read you a paragraph from the morning service of the Jewish people. One of the service paragraphs goes like this. It's very positive. It's a tree of life to them that grasp it, and of them that uphold it, and everyone is rendered happy. Its ways are ways of pleasantness, and all its paths are peace. Length of days is in its right hand, and its left hand are riches and honor. It pleased the Lord for his righteousness' sake to magnify the law and to make it honorable. And the law they're talking about is the law that Moses set down, the commandments of Moses, and they're saying that the commandments are the tree of life. So you want to debate it amongst yourselves. Don't bother with me. Take it up with God. Do what you want. We all do the best we can. Last night I was sitting in a Chinese restaurant after the show, and I'll admit it, I had a couple of drinks. It was a very tense week for me. So I had a couple of drinks. I'm in the restaurant already, feeling no pain, the way Jackie Gleason would say, and I'm sailing into my third beer or whatever. And I'm staring at the fish tank, a very beautiful tropical fish tank, a saltwater tank. And I see them swimming around a piece of red coral. And I said to my table companion, I said, you know something? I said, do you think that religion has any more meaning in reality to man than that red rock does to the fish? She said to me, what do you mean? I said, well, I don't know. You look at people, some worship a tower, some worship a rock, some worship mud, and to them it's real. I said, to the fish, maybe the red rock, the red coral in the tank represents some kind of godlike entity that they worship and they're afraid of. And every time they go by, they nod when they go by the red rock. I mean, I said, okay, so what does that make me now, an atheist? I don't know what it makes me. I doubt things sometimes. I doubt myself. I doubt the whole package deal. You know what I'm saying? I doubt the entire Boy Scout oath, let me put it to you that way. But at the end of the day, you come back to who you are anyway. So, you know, then you do the other thing, and you try to make the best of it. You try not to hurt anybody, and you go through life the best you can. Lately, I've been on a new kick, which is trying to be pleasant to people. I know it's hard the way people are on the roads today. My God, the cutoffs, the fingers, the idiots with the phones and the Blackberries wherever you go. No one talks to anybody. Then on the other hand, they're lunatics. I'm walking in an outdoor mall yesterday before lunch, and a grown woman with a Santa hat. A grown woman with a Santa hat, I don't even know. I'm walking with a hoodie over my head because I like to be left alone. I'm thinking, cool air on my face. She turns around and says, Merry Christmas, right in my face, within an inch of my face. I felt like a character out of a Saul Bellow novel. I felt as though I was living Mr. Semler's planet. It was like a mad woman from middle America giving me a Merry Christmas to the face. I was literally taken aback. But being a good Russian of origin, my face didn't change any movement. Nothing changed in my face. I still have the capacity to not respond to anything, no matter what happens, up to a certain point. So I stared at her like she was a lunatic. I didn't smile. I didn't frown. I didn't say, go away, lunatic. I didn't say Merry Christmas back because I didn't know what she was doing. It was as though I was in Brobbingdang. Okay, I landed in Brobbingdang amongst middle America, and there was idiocy and insanity. But then on further reflection, I said, look, she's a nice woman. She's probably some liberal woman here in Marin County, California, probably on medication, probably still drives around with an Obama Biden bumper sticker, no doubt drives a Prius, go down the list, and she means well. But then I thought again. I said, no, wait a minute. She said Merry Christmas. She didn't say Happy Holidays. So I said, wait a minute, she probably doesn't drive a Prius. She probably didn't vote for Obama Biden. My God, she might even be a listener of this average nation who was just simply trying to get out a decent, you know, Merry Christmas message. And I kept walking along in my hoodie thinking to myself about how strange life really is. But I still feel as though I'm in Brobbingdang virtually every day, no matter where I go or what I do. I could be in a Chinese restaurant, Brobbingdang. I can be in an Italian restaurant, people get too loud next to me after three wines and a tiramisu, Brobbingdang. I can be in a mall, Brobbingdang. I can go to a Japanese restaurant, and the guy gives me a bad table, and I say, I want that table, and he says, that's only for two or more. I say, we'll buy three meals. He says, we have a reservation anyway. I walk out, and I say, Brobbingdang to myself. You see how it works? You have to read Gulliver's Travels when you're impressionable at an impressionable young age to understand what I'm talking about. If you've not read Gulliver's Travels, you don't know what you're missing. I'll be right back. This is the Savage Nation. Wow. Is Obama in Brobbingdang?
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're swinging around here on the topic of Obama abdicating during the press conference, and I'm asking, never mind so much how good Clinton came across, because he was a great fiscal conservative, pushing forward the fiscally conservative message of extend the Bush-era tax cuts, but where the heck is Biden? Where did he go as vice president? Why didn't he take the step forward? Something is very wrong with the picture. We know what it is. They've lost control. They've lost power. Obama has no leadership qualities, and they don't know what to do. So they're bringing out the old war horse, Bill Clinton. And I think he might run for the presidency again, even though he's constrained by the amendment. Which one? The 22nd prevents 22nd. It doesn't say they can't run again. It says they can't run more than twice, comma, in turn. They're going to, you know, all I can do is need a lawyer from Harvard to change it and say that that really meant that he could run after leaving and making a fortune and come back. But it couldn't run three in a row after, because of FDR would still be president if he didn't have polio. Because of that. Judy in Kansas City, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Savage, for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on the story of the gentleman who lived to 100 and what a remarkably inspirational life he had. And thank you for sharing that with us, because that's...
Isn't that an amazing story? It was so positive. I had to introduce it last hour. You're the only one who heard it. No one else heard it. The man lived 100 years. But to think he lost his wife of 64 years when he was 91, he wanted to turn his head to the wall and die. And his son said, you have so much to live for. The man got up, basically retook his life and remarried at age 92.
Yeah, that is something, isn't it? I mean, you know, I personally would probably not want to do that again, but hey, whatever.
Well, it just shows you that you don't have to give up at any stage of your life. There's always a new beginning with a new dawn and a new day. So there was a great man, a wonderful man, Murray Bernthal, with a life that is biblical in its... in its scope and biblical in its entities and decencies by what he did. And now we're going to go to the omega of men. Here's another one on the other side, not the man we just mentioned. Ivy League professor charged with incest after 3 years sexual relationship with his daughter. Now, here's a red diaper dopa baby of the type you would expect in the Obama administration. His name is Professor David Epstein. Age 46, allegedly bedded his 24-year-old daughter between 06 and 09. Of course, he's at Columbia University, that great bastion of insanity, where the red diaper dopa babies congregate. He's accused of a 3-year sexual relationship with his daughter. Now, what does Epstein specialize in at Columbia? American politics and voting rights. Oh, yeah. He's said to have also exchanged twisted text messages with his daughter during the consensual relationship. University spokesmouth Hornsby said that Epstein is, quote, now on administrative leave and will not be teaching students. The well-liked Professor Epstein, taught at Harvard and Stanford, where else, was married to another lecturer at the Ivy League institution, Sharon O'Halloran, but the pair recently divorced. I wonder why. I have no idea why the wife would have left him, why he only slept with the daughter. I mean, after all, they're liberals. You know, if it feels good, do it. Why should she have left him over that? I can't imagine. You know, okay, left for another woman, but it was the daughter. I mean, maybe it was too close even for the liberal wife. So defense lawyer Matthew Galuzzo says, we ask that everyone remember that he is innocent until proven otherwise, and that these allegations are nothing more than allegations. All right. Epstein, who teaches political science at Ivy League Institute, Columbia University, allegedly exchanged twisted text messages with his daughter during the consensual relationship. Epstein faces up to 4 years behind bars if convicted. Take a look at the picture of the prize. We have it up on michaelsavage.com. Just take a look at the mouth, and you'll know right away everything you need to know about the arrogance and the mentality behind the face. It's the kind of face that you see in the Obama administration whenever they step from behind the curtain. Postscript. We do not know if Professor Epstein passed the Epstein-Barr syndrome onto his daughter, but we will report once we find out. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Sacramento. Kathleen, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I'd be mortified if I were Michelle Obama right now. I mean, my husband scoots out of a press conference to the people of the United States and blames me?
Oh.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, he blamed it on mommy. Mommy's calling.
Yeah, I mean...
Oh, right. Michelle is mad at me. And then, did you hear what Bill Clinton said? It was quick. He said... Oh, I don't want to get her mad. Go. He didn't say, he said go. He literally told me to get off the stage.
Are they all horrified of her?
Her? I mean, who? The nice Michelle, the one who tells us to eat vegetables and then eats cheeseburgers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one. Yeah.
The woman who was not proud of America until she became first lady?
That horrified me.
They've sure kept her in the background, haven't they?
It's like they told her to please shut up. But
well, they know that she frightens people. She has a certain way about her that sort of turns off the masses. Let's put it to you that way.
Well,
I think that he is definitely a little bit afraid of what mommy might have said to him if he didn't show up at the party. And we don't know who what the party was. Can you guys research what party it was that the president ran to when he ran off the stage? Maybe it was the president of White House Christmas party, but who was there? Maybe they invited the president of Indonesia and he had to be there. We don't know. We have to find out what the guest list included, you know, before we can jump to conclusions. Kathleen, I'm sending you a Christmas present. Take a guess what it is.
Oh, I hope it's trickle-up poverty.
You didn't buy one yet?
I haven't yet. I haven't gotten to town yet.
Okay, well, you just got one. It's flying out to you on Monday. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Palm Beach, Ann, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm really enjoying your show this evening. And just a quick comment on that press conference today. It was so odd that there was even was a press conference to make yourself look foolish like that. I mean, they
now, wait a minute. Let's pause at what you just said. He went along with the Republicans on extending the Bush taxes. I actually thought that made him look good, presidential. Then he comes out and has a press conference that he runs away from, which makes him look bad, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Why would you set yourself up to look bad?
Yeah, who advised them to come out with Bill Clinton? Who set that up?
Exactly. But that's not why I'm calling. In trickle-up poverty, I have
yes.
a question.
You actually read the book and you read 110,000 words and you have a question. Great. And what is that question?
I'm on my third read of this. I have many questions, but we're going to start with this one. Around page 80 on Nightmare on Wall Street, you make a very interesting question that why isn't George Soros and the Managed Funds Association under investigation by the Congress? What can we, the public, the taxpayers, do to force this with this incoming Congress? We want this investigated. We also want the border shut down from this sieve that we have just allowing people to go back and forth.
Right. Correct. The people in the border states are being overrun by literal armies of criminals. And we have to repeat every time we say it and do a mea culpa that not all illegal immigrants are criminals in one sense. They all are in the sense that they break the law by coming over the border illegally, but they're not all here to deal drugs and to kill. Unfortunately, too many of them are. And the fact is there are armies of illegal aliens coming over the border armed with AK-47s and heavy weapons, and they're outgunning the police in Texas and some of the other border states. And the government is actually negligent in not protecting these states. And that is why Arizona's law is so valid. But you asked another question. And, of course, we would like to see justice done. We'd all like to see a congressional panel called on the financial meltdown that led to Obama's election. I don't know that we will, because so many in Congress are beholden to the powers that be in the financial world. And as you well know, the way business is done in Washington, it's all about greasing palms and money. And unless the people go, let us say, berserk and make this the number one priority, which I doubt they're going to do, I don't think you're ever going to see such an investigation of the Managed Funds Association and the great Mr. Soros.
Because I really think that it would shed so much light on what is going on that we need to know. I mean, it's
well, of course we need to know. We don't want to hear any more about Madoff. Madoff was a piker compared to what these people did to this country. And by the way, are still doing. I mean, the scam that Madoff pulled was astonishing in its scope, but minuscule compared to what these people have pulled off in melting down the strongest economy on earth. Where'd the money go? It didn't disappear, as I point out in my book. And it did not disappear. A lot of people became richer than they ever were. They have more money than King Midas ever had.
Yes. That's why, like I said, if you...
How's the weather in Palm Beach? Did the frost disappear?
It was super cold for the past 2 days. It warmed up into the 70s today, but we're supposed to get another cold front on Sunday, so coming
because
in.
Palm Beach is beautiful around Christmas time. It's gorgeous down there, isn't it? It's really beautiful.
This is is a good time to be here, not the summer.
Hey, Ann, I want to ask you something as a side note. When the very wealthy used to go to Florida, you know, when it was not a year-round residence or such, when did they come? What were the months that the Vanderbilts, et cetera, came down to Florida? When did they come down? What months? Was it December, January, or when?
Well, it depends on the different families that you had. I mean, when the Kennedys used to come down, they didn't even have air conditioning in their house, from what I was told. But a lot of these people would come, like, right at Christmas or after Christmas, and then spend a couple months here until the heat started coming.
But what was the season for the very, very rich in the 20s? Well, I wonder what that was, 20s, 30s in the Palm Beach area. I thought it was December, January or something, 2 months. Because Florida has some of the most beautiful weather on earth, of course, in the winter. We all know that. But I find that after about, certainly by the end of March, it's insufferable for me. I can't take the humidity. Even in October, I almost fainted there 1 year. I couldn't take it.
Yeah,
you know where the weather is gorgeous right now? Here in the Bay Area, it's horrible, and the way I love it, it's horribly wet and rainy and cold, which I love, Ann. But do you know where it's really warm and hot right now? L.A. is 80 degrees, 75, 80. People don't realize Los Angeles has some of the most beautiful winter weather on earth. I don't know if you know that. It's gorgeous. It could be like, well, that's why Los Angeles became so popular and so big. Why do you think the average person moved into Los Angeles back in the 30s, 40s, and post-war? The weather was gorgeous. Of course, the industry was there, et cetera. Anyway, thank you very much for that call. I doubt very much that you're ever going to see that investigation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. If you care to talk about Mr. Epstein Barr or anything else, this is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Here's what I'll say is I've been keeping the first lady waiting for about half an hour, so I'm going to take off.
I don't want to make her mad. Please go.
You're in good hands, and Gibbs will call last question.
Yeah, help me. Thank you.
There go my baby, moving on down the line.
Now, the question is, what is the question? There are so many questions that you can ask any one of them and come up with 80 answers. A, why did he call a press conference after he had just done a deal with the Republicans that made him look centrist and, let us say, reemerged as a leader? Who was it who whispered in the president's ear and said, now do a press conference and we'll bring out Bill Clinton in order to rescue the left wing? And who didn't think it through and say, wait a minute, this will make the president look completely a vacillator and weak. He shouldn't do it. Where is the wisdom here? Where are the advisors? That's one question, of which there are myriad answers. Number two, where was Biden? In other words, if the president needed to run to a Christmas party or escape the heat, why didn't the vice president step up? He is the second in command of the Democrat Party, figuratively, literally. Where was he? Surely he could have put down the squirt gun for a few moments and left Bethesda and come out for a second even. There's no thought here. Something's wrong. So it's terrible for us. You know, it's not good for America to see this man in such trouble. By the way, see, many of you say, oh, great, we got him on the run. It's terrific. Well, in one regard, yes, it means the left is fractured and the Democrats are finished. And that's good. A pox upon all the houses. That's all for what they did to this country and what they would have done. Okay, that's the good news. But on the other hand, we have bad enemies, really bad. Now they see that we have a vacillator and basically an escape artist for president. So they're going to press us. Then you take a look at Gates, the head of the military, and Mullen, who are Stepford-wise for every left-wing policy imaginable, fighting their own generals on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Again, weakling. Terrible, not good for the military, terrible for troop morale, emboldens our enemies. Go down the list. So it's not good for us to have a weak leader. And so where this ends up, I don't really know. I don't know where this is going to be on Monday. he's going to realize that the whole country's abuzz with, did he abdicate? Why did he leave? He looked weak by tonight already because of what the internet's abuzz. Talk radio's abuzz. I am anyway, and I pick up the afternoon across America, except for one individual who sounds like your grandmother having a hysterectomy without anesthesia. I'm the only one anyone listens to. And so, therefore, it's a big topic. Why is Bill Clinton back? Why? Why him of all people? And he went on and on. God bless him. God bless the man. Where did he get all this energy from? He relished it. Like, there he was again, back in familiar turf. And the press, there they were again. Mr. President this, Mr. President that. Yes, Charles, and yes, Roberta. There he was, back in charge again. And the schmucks were happy. But they were back in the good old times, you know, let the good times roll. The good times are here again. There they were, President Clinton this, President Clinton that. And the junior senator from Illinois is at a party somewhere with mistletoe. But he did. Did you hear Clinton? Do you know what I am talking about? Listen to one of the clips for a minute, please. Listen to clip 14, just for a second.
I have reviewed this agreement that the president reached with the Republican leaders. And I want to make full disclosure. You know, I make quite a bit of money now, so the position that the Republicans have urged will personally benefit me. And on its own, I wouldn't support it because I don't think that my tax cut is the most economically efficient way to get the economy.
I don't believe it. He's real glad he's not paying more. Let me put it to you that way. There's not a man on earth who makes the kind of money he makes who wants to give more to the government. He breathed a sigh of relief, too, that he didn't have to pony up more money to the jerks. And he knows better than we do what they do with it, okay? So, boy, they all have to say it. I don't really want it. I didn't need it. Even though I'm wealthy, it would have benefited me. I'm glad it happened, but I'm so sorry it happened, because if it had not happened, I would have been glad to give more money to the morons in Washington to blow on bridges to a Nancy Pelosi's cannoli factory, and so on. So I don't believe that part of it. But Obama was put into a place where he had to agree with the Republicans because the people who really make money and run the world said to him, hey, Schmendrick, let's stop already with the Columbia University bubble blowing here. Just for 2 minutes, put down the beanie and the pie and the bung. All right, put down the bung and put down the Karl Marx for a minute, the collected works of Karl Marx. Let's talk turkey here, Schmendrick. You never ran a business. You never created a product that anyone knew. So listen for 2 seconds. No one needs anything you ever created. So listen to those of us who run mega empires. If you take away these taxes, you're going to destroy the economy even further. So just knock it off with this left-wing gibberish. They don't know what they're talking about. And let's do the right thing here, and let's make the economy move ahead, or we're finished altogether, not only as a party, but as a nation. So Obama says, I agree with the Republicans. He did the right thing. He could have left it at that. He didn't have to have a press conference today. What did he do it for? Why did he bring out Clinton? Answer, because he was misadvised. He has bad advisors now. The adults have left. They've gone back to the business and academic world. The good ones are gone. And all that's left are the psychopathic people behind the scenes, the czars and the losers who can't even get their jobs back in academia because they're such failures. You know, I'm surprised Robert Reich hasn't been hired again from Berkeley. They could have taken him in on a tricycle somewhere. The eternal Robert Reich. Every time you turn around, there, just when you don't need him, sitting there, yeah, the rich, this, the rich. You know how rich he is. Look into Robert Reich's past from Berkeley. Robert Reich. Ask him why his wife sued the university when she wasn't given tenure. Ask him about the rich. Ask Robert Reich why he bashes the rich and how his wife sued when she didn't get tenure. The next time Robert Reich appears on MSNBC. Surprised he hasn't been called back by the Obama administration.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
think he has worked extremely hard. I think he would tell you, even when in the midst of a tax agreement and a START deal and all the other things that accumulate, that even where he might have once found some comfort in that, he's pushed it away. So he understands its dangers, and I think has done a lot of extraordinary work to wrestle with that habit as millions of Americans have.
Let's go to the hop. Let's go to the hop.
Oh, baby.
Let's go to the hop.
Oh, baby.
The big news today, of course. Well, you may not know it. I mean, most of you are busy Christmas shopping or working or doing what normal people do. I have never actually, this is the most unprecedented, let's say, situation I've ever seen in my years of watching politics. While President Obama was giving a press conference explaining why he went along with the Republicans on the tax extensions, the Bush-era tax extensions, Bill Clinton was suddenly brought in out of nowhere. And Bill Clinton took control, and someone asked the president a question, and the president said, I've been keeping the first lady waiting, so I'm going to take off. And he left. And he left Bill Clinton on the podium, and Bill Clinton held court as though he was now president. And those in the media, I think, referred to him accurately when they said Mr. President with every question. He was as though he was president again. I thought I was watching a return to 10 years ago, and there was Bill Clinton. And you want to hear something surprising? Bill Clinton was a fiscal conservative. Bill Clinton looked more conservative and seemed more presidential than George Bush. Shockingly, I believe that Bill Clinton has become very conservative, politically, of course, if not socially, because he's a wealthy man now, number one. And all of his friends are wealthy men, and he finally understands how government, more particularly how business works, okay? Now, here's the blowout question of the day, because I think it's going to happen. Do you think Bill Clinton will run for the presidency in 2012, if not against Obama, with Obama not even rerunning? I think there's a high probability he might do that. You say, well, he can't. There are term limits. Well, I don't know that there are term limits. He had his 8 years, that is true. But I don't believe the term limits law aid us. Moreover, we have the precedent here in California where Governor Jerry Brown was then Attorney General and then ran for the governorship and just won again. Anything is possible. So the big news is Obama walks off the podium as though he's abdicated. Like some tin pot dictator, he abdicated and turned it over to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton looked like the president again. Surprise appearance at Obama's side to back the tax cut compromise Obama negotiated with Republicans. And then Clinton says, I don't believe there's a better deal out there, he told the reporters in the White House briefing room, who had been summoned at a moment's notice to see if the former chief executive, meaning Clinton, would back the current one. Clinton and Obama had just finished a private meeting in the Oval Office. Then Obama gives a quick statement, says it was a terrific meeting, and then turns the podium over to Bill Clinton. And there he went. The outspoken, voluble former president took off, and Obama took off as well, leaving the stage altogether, saying he had holiday parties to attend. Clinton said both sides are going to have to eat some things they don't like. We don't want to slip back into a recession. We've got to keep this thing going and accelerate its pace. I think this is the best available option. Now, you may or may not know, the tax deal includes a two-year extension of tax cuts for all income levels and an extension of unemployment benefits. The radical libs oppose the deal, saying it gives away too much to Republicans. Personally, I don't know how anyone's going to pay for any of this, but the big news is that Clinton's back, and he may be running for the presidency again. Yep, President Clinton was back again. I saw it. Others have seen it. It's astonishing. And you have to hear some of this. And I'm sure we're going to rerun it again in this hour because this is the big story and it's going to start the ball rolling. I am not going to be the last to ask the question, do you think Bill Clinton will once again run for the presidency in 2012? I think he already is. Remember Hillary last week said she isn't? Well, no one asked him if he is. I'm sure he would deny it, right? I'm sure he would absolutely deny it, but hey, this is amazing stuff. Well, what else is in the news? What is bold and what is fresh? Well, we have a new president, Bill Clinton. A new lawsuit has been launched. The trustee for the Madoff scandal launched a $19.6 billion lawsuits. He's launched it against 60 groups and individuals accused of participating in a legal scheme. I would think that the trustee himself should be arrested for having ripped off the trust, personally, by what I've seen. Old Tim Geithner, the TreSec, into the hospital with kidney stones, I guess where the phrase, he has a lot of gall, comes from. Even though they're kidney stones, not gallstones, it does apply. You know what I'm saying? Mr. Putin of Russia slams the West for arresting the WikiLeaks slime bag traitor. In one of the cables, they say Cuba will be broke within 2 to 3 years. That's news? I thought they were broke already. And donations to WikiLeaks are tax-deductible in Germany. Can you believe this? White House says Obama is still trying to kick the cigarette habit. The royals were given a royal pain in the butt, and they have no security over there. When a mob of rich, spoiled anarchists, including the son of one of the Pink Floyd musicians, a rich kid, went on a riot, you see, over the raise in college tuition, even though it wouldn't hurt him. But he had a little fun burning things, breaking things. And one of the snots poked a stick through the window of the Rolls Royce that the Prince and Camilla were in and poked her in the ribs. And the impotent British Protection Service did nothing. 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 Can you believe this? All right. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What else is in the news? Temperatures in Cancun, Mexico have fallen to a 100-year record low right in the middle of the global warming summit. That's right. In the middle of the global warming summit, the temperatures in Cancun have fallen to a 100-year record low. This is something that is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Nobody can believe this. And during this global warming summit, the communist, I should say Maoist, president of Bolivia calls for a global climate court. Wow. I wonder if they can put my neighbor in prison for burning a fireplace. Think so? Deficit hits record. There's nothing new about that. I don't know where they're getting the money from. November federal budget deficit highest on record. All of these stories and more can be found in one place where I cull them for you from the, you know, that is michaelsavage.com. Top right story. Is the WikiLeaker to get a quickie as a spy is my headline. Let me read it again. Is the WikiLeaker to get a quickie as a spy? Read who caused the economic Armageddon to elect puppet Obama. It's in trickle-up poverty. Also on michaelsavage.com, Burma's secret nuclear ties to North Korea. Wow. 4.5 million illegal aliens hit highways without licenses. Shocking. Just shocking. Let's go for the bottom. Oh, the defense chief, Robert Gates, has attacked his own generals, saying that we must have gays in the military, open gays, you know. None charged with embezzling $1.2 million from college. Wow, and I thought they were all honest. Speaking of professors, an Ivy League professor has been charged with incest, accused of a 3-year sexual relationship with his daughter. You hear this? That's who teaches now. Where? Ivy League professor charged with incest after 3-year sexual relationship with his daughter. Political science professor David Epstein, age 46, allegedly bedded his 24-year-old daughter between 06 and 09. Epstein, who specialized in American politics and voting rights, is also said to have exchanged twisted text messages with his daughter during the consensual relationship. I can't believe this. The well-liked professor, who has taught at Harvard and Stanford, where else, was married to another lecturer at the Ivy League institution, but the pair recently divorced. Oh, God. His defense lawyer, it gets better, Matthew Galuzzo, said, "We ask that everyone remember that he is innocent until proven otherwise, and that these allegations are nothing more than allegations." Epstein faces up to 4 years behind bars if convicted. We do not know if he gave his daughter Epstein-Barr syndrome. All of this and more, all of this and more is at Columbia University, the most liberal whack job college in the world. And the story can be found on michaelsavage.com. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan and what's going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. Here's White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs addressing again what the American people are wondering about. Is the president smoking cigarettes?
I've not seen or witnessed evidence of any smoking in probably 9 months. I mean, I think you've heard him say this. This is not something that he's proud of. He knows that it's not good for him. He knows that it's he doesn't like it. He doesn't like children to know about it, obviously, including his.
Gibbs said that the Prez hasn't been smoking despite all the pressure of cutting deals and selling the country out.
I think he has worked extremely hard. I think he would tell you even when in the midst of a tax agreement and a START deal and all the other things that accumulate, that even where he might have once found some comfort in that, he's pushed it away. So he understands its dangers, and I think has done a lot of extraordinary work to wrestle with that habit as millions of Americans have.
And old Nancy Pelosi touted the Amnesty for Illegal Aliens bill, which they affectionately call the Dream Act. She said this is what the Founding Fathers had in mind. The Founding Fathers had illegal aliens in mind.
If you have ever been to a Dream Act occasion when young people come together and speak about their love for America, you will hear anthems of patriotism that, again, would make you so very, very proud, and how it echoes what our founders had in mind.
And then, of course, Blah Blah Walters had an interview with Sarah Palin, attacking her and asking the same insipid questions that exemplify Blah Blah Walters.
You know, Governor, many people find the thought of you as president a little scary. You hear, oh, she's very charming, but she's uninformed. What are they afraid of?
You know, I hear the comment out there that's made often that I'm polarizing. And so I'm surprised that you didn't use that word.
Okay, I used it. You're polarizing.
Okay. Ah, to dream. Perchance to sleep. Yeah, perchance to sleep. I could fall asleep. But you know what the second message is? And I didn't know whether I should tell you this. I have to share it with you. Should I tell him what happened this morning? I don't think so, with the dog, because it's a humiliating thing, but I think God was telling me, don't think that this makes you special because you have a bestseller. Should I tell him the dream? Well, it's kind of embarrassing, but I'll tell you, because I kind of share an awful lot with you on the air, and I don't know if I should, but I guess I have to. If I gave you this dream, which was real, about the prophetic dream and the woman in the classroom with Mao Zedong, and how I stood up and I yelled at the teacher. You know, I mean, you know, many people are afraid to respond to authority. I've never been shy to stand up in a classroom. But there's always a cost for it. There's a social cost. You become an outcast. You must understand that I am a social outcast. I don't think you understand this. I have no friends. I have only a few family members who I'm close with, and that's about it. I have no friends. Now, whether this is a product of my outspokenness, I have a lot of people who admire what I do. I have millions of people who follow my every word on the air. But fundamentally, you know, this is it, man. You're alone. Nobody really wants to be around you if you're very outspoken. And if you're politically as outspoken as I am, they're afraid of you. Okay, so I write the book, it becomes a bestseller, it was like pushing this boulder up the mountain, And it was so exciting, then so rewarding, and then all of a sudden the dream. And I say, well, wait a minute. Shouldn't have the stars and, you know, stars and stripes, shouldn't I have been invited to the White House? Shouldn't the Republicans have said, Michael Savage, you're the greatest. Look what you've done. You've nothing, zero. Like nothing came from the high, you know, from Mount Olympus. And I said, it's like nothing. I've had five bestsellers before, so believe me, I knew what to expect. But each and every time a performer or an artist, when they hit the target, they want something for it. They want something to change in their life. I don't know if you know the inner workings of an artist of any kind. They expect something to change inside themselves. Now, if you expect it to come from outside, you're going to be mighty disappointed. Nothing's going to happen. So nothing happened. Nothing changed. Still alone. Maybe that's the way I set it up. Don't know. It could be the way I set it up, okay? I don't belong to clubs. I don't belong to organizations. I try to keep away from people, basically. So blah, blah, blah. Go to sleep, wake up in the morning, there's a horrible smell in the bedroom. A horror. I don't know whether I was dreaming, and I'm walking in the dark to let the dog out. Do I have to tell you what the barefoot went into? So I start to curse, and I say, why in the world did this happen? There's a reason for it. God wants me to understand that that's what we're born as dust, and we end as dust.
Savage.
I talked about Big Sis Napolitano's If You See Something, Say Something program in Walmart this week. Joining us with his opinion on this is Robert Scott Bell.
Thanks again, Michael. Always great to be back with you and the Savage Nation audience with a message of health, freedom, and liberty here. And we find out the Obama administration has more leaks than a spaghetti colander. We've got to understand that we need to go back to the source of these things rather than just address the symptoms, just as we do with holistic medicine and looking at healing the human body as well. And so if you look at what's happening with the WikiLeaks and Assange, I think they're going to have to arrest pretty much every Swede for having sex without a condom next, which is, pretty, I'd say, comical in a tragic situation. But however they're going to nail this thing down, I don't know. But I am acknowledging some really insane movement towards the police state, even further here in the United States, you know, as far as, fighting a war, protecting Americans from terrorists and such. Now, Big Sis Napolitano, and I know you covered this, Janet wants everybody in Walmart to know, if you see something, say something.
Can you believe this?
And I'm thinking, gee, what do they want us to see, and then what do they want us to say? Because the last time I walked into a mass market retailer, I saw things that were much, much more dangerous than even Julian Assange and so-called terrorists. And that is, if you walk down the drug aisle of a Walmart, you will see substances being sold that are approved by government that are killing thousands of Americans, not just hundreds, but tens of thousands of Americans every year. Somehow I don't think that's what Napolitano wants us to warn our fellow Americans about, however.
Exactly.
Although if we look at the fact that we went to war, we went to Iraq and Afghanistan, now they don't even know what they're there for, supposedly in response to the 9/11 terror attacks and 3,000 or so Americans dying at that one event, we ignore completely the fact that there are 33, 34, 35 9/11s happening every year based on the deaths to over-the-counter and prescription drugs. And these were acknowledged in the medical journals, including the Journal of the American Medical Association. And so if we ascribe to and endorse a culture of life, yes, we can acknowledge the danger of terrorism, but how do we also ignore simultaneously the danger of our own government approving and validating substances that are as much or more deadly on a per capita basis than terrorism is in the history of this country?
What does Walmart stand to gain with these policies? Where do they? I mean, well, what's in it for them?
Walmart stands to benefit here with the participation in the "If You See Something, Say Something" campaign. Perhaps they may be the only supplier of officially sanctioned drugs in the future for government delivery in the welfare state, for which, of course, is going to increase because the government continues to interfere with the freedom, not only to heal but to interact in the economy. You know, we talk about the dangers of funny money Evidently, the Federal Reserve can't even print new $100 bills. It's hard enough to utilize money with no backing, but now they're printing these things up, and they can't even print them. They're so complicated and complex. But what is not complicated or complex is the fact that Americans need sound money. Need money that cannot be printed up out of thin air and making that which they earn worth less and less, and then forcing them into soup lines and bread lines and lines to gain more welfare to pay for their energy bills to stay warm in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You want independence, you want independent Americans, yet you force through the monopoly system, economic monopoly here, the printing of money, which is not authorized in the United States Constitution, to a semi-private Federal Reserve system, and they have absolutely screwed up the value of the dollar since 1913 to less than 4 cents of its original value at that time. And yet we sit here and say that Ben Bernanke is going to be the savior of the country, of the economy, when all he's doing with quantitative easing, which is all Orwell speak for inflation, is somehow going to salvage the economy and get people back to work.
I'm sick of this.
And in the meantime, we have the Congress critters and Obama now saying, okay, we're not going to raise taxes on anybody, but never the question is raised as to the morality of stealing money from Americans and redistributing it to anybody else, because there are lawful means by which the Constitution covers the issue of taxation, yet the way it is done today through the violation of ownership of property through income taxation means that you do not own the fruits of your labor. The government gets to say how much you get to keep, whatever percentage it is. The Democrats on the left wanting you to keep less and less. The Republicans, very few and far between, even arguing against the concept of income taxation versus other means by which the federal government could legitimately raise money without stealing from the efforts of those that are working hardest to provide for their families, perhaps even to create jobs by creating the businesses that are the essential engine, which have been wiped out through global internationalist treaties by people who are more interested in one world order, than an American independence that has a manufacturing base for which it could basically restore integrity to the economy here and help others around the world.
Right, right, right.
Now, I tie that back into the health of every American, because we see the inability of Americans to pay for their so-called health care. We've been through this many times, Michael, the discussion of the absolute abomination that is Obamacare. But it was precipitated by every Republican and Democratic administration, going back to Nixon and beyond, who basically abandoned the free market and wanted to establish and strengthen a medical monopoly. Any more than, as we talk about, the economic monopoly does not result in more freedom or innovation. The medical monopoly has certainly stifled innovation within it and outside of it.
Hmm.
If we just had one state in the union that would repeal and end the monopoly laws in the state, as far as who can be a healer, who can be healed, what substances can and can't be used, and they would suddenly free up all of the knowledge and awareness out there from holistic doctors, whether they be naturopaths, homeopaths, herbalists, and medical doctors that also want to work holistically, we would see an influx of medical tourism into that state. That economy would be the jewel of the 50 states. And then one by one, I am certain that every state would follow in order to free up the healers to heal. Have a free market for medicine. Yes, have a free market for healing. And I know it's shocking and outrageous, but many doctors who I've talked with over the years are very much in favor of this freedom, because it would help them to do that which they know is right by their patients, and they're confident enough to not need a monopoly to wipe out competition to heal.
But what else is the Obama administration doing to make citizens turn against each other?
In addition to the absurdity of the Obama administration and all of their leaks and all of their concern for mandating every American buy monopoly medicine, whether they like it or not, or face jail time or fines or additional taxes. Rather than working on the economy, getting government out of the way, the Democrats in the Senate and many in the House instead have been pushing forward very hard on this so-called Food Safety Modernization Act in Congress, which is stalled because the dummy Democrats in the Senate put some taxing aspects of the bill in the Senate bill. And, of course, the taxes are only supposed to originate in the House, so that kind of put a crimp on it. But the idea was that somehow the food was not safe in America. And, of course, it isn't that very often that you hear of people going to bake sales. I think there's now federal mandates on banning bake sales without FDA oversight.
Oh, right.
But this so-called Modernization Act was designed to empower the FDA even more to be able to have recalls, inspections. They wanted to hire 4,000 new inspectors. It's like $4 billion wasn't enough to regulate. And between the FDA and the USDA, they already had plenty of authority to regulate and so-called make safe the food supply. And they ignore completely that when you hear about E. coli or salmonella contamination on lettuce, it's coming from the upstream of these factory farms, big agribusiness, growing these animals in pens and pumping them full of antibiotics, having them live in their sewage. And, of course, that water ends up contaminating these big factory-farmed foods, fresh produce.
Exactly.
So rather than cleaning up their act, they wanted to now mandate this bill, which would limit the freedom of Americans to even grow food in their own backyard and attack farmers, family farmers, and make them part or subject to these extremely high fees of inspection for which there was no real need. And so we see the status, and there were even some Republicans that voted for this, which tells you that the bulk of our so-called representatives still don't get it. They are still hopped up on FDA-approved pharmaceutical monopoly.
True.
And they still don't get it on the economy, as we're looking to question the Fed, perhaps audit the Fed even further and find out that our so-called private monopoly system is bailing out foreign banks, bailing out foreign countries, while the average American is being raped through income taxation. Now half of America is not even paying anything into it, so we have complete, what we call, redistribution of wealth. How much closer to Marxism do we want to be before we are that? And, of course, when it comes to the health of Americans, as I said, monopoly in any form is not helping Americans to get well and causing us to be more dependent upon forms of medicine that are unaffordable unless Janet Napolitano then mandates it through, oh, watch everybody, it's only available in Walmart, just watch what's happening here.
Look, I wrote about this in the smash bestseller Trickle Up Poverty. Obama's trying to regulate every aspect of our lives, and they don't want you to even know it.
Not only is the government dumbing us down, they've been dumbing us down for generations about, you know, through these mandates, through monopoly, through the monopoly school system. I call them government indoctrination centers that have led everybody to believe that every disease is evidence of some FDA-approved drug deficiency. And, of course, it's absurd any more than we're having an economic problem because we have, a deficiency of dollars, right? Federal Reserve note dollars. No, they print up more and more and more. What's the point? Why should anybody have to work? They could just print money. I mean, it's absolutely absurd how far from principle and historical precedent we are drifting and have drifted to the point where we become not only a debtor nation, but a nation enslaved to China, to Asia, to the oil-producing countries of the Middle East. And yet you find Saudi Arabia, through these leaks, you know, is begging us to do things on their behalf and yet funding many of these terrorists and terrorist organizations. With friends like that, who needs enemies? And so that continues under the Obama administration ad nauseum and seemingly unabated until the American people wake up and say enough is enough. But they have to be healthy enough to do so.
Well, thanks for the report, Robert.
Thanks again, Michael. I wish we could just throw everybody in Washington, D.C. into a far infrared heat sauna to detoxify the insanity that's going on there. But until the medical monopoly is ended, we can't even acknowledge that that kind of therapy would be better than intoxicating people further. But I appreciate the opportunity, as we do every time we're able to get the message of health, freedom, and liberty out there. Please send your listeners to my website at robertscottbell.com to learn more.
It is more important than ever to stay informed. Buy Trickle Up Poverty for the holidays, and you see for yourself. I'll be right back.
Savage.
And now that we've covered politics for the day, we can go to the magazines I bought in the bookstore. So in front of me, I have Hemmings Motor News for November 2010, Plane and Pilot, the magazine for active piston engine pilots, Yachting Magazine, let's see, Innovative Design Trends, Winter Charter Escape to the Virgin Islands, Is the St. Barth's Bucket the Ultimate Regatta? And then I have PMY, that's not PMS, PMY, Power and Motor Yacht, America's 100 Largest Yacht. Yachts. I don't really want a big boat like that. I never dreamed of it. I don't want it. I'm not one of the, I don't like people that much where I want to be with a crowd on a boat. See, that's the problem with a large boat, is you kind of go with a group and show off. I don't understand. I mean, I'm not a party guy. Maybe that's why I'm not that happy. I don't know. Maybe I should be a party guy with a couch and champagne and drugs and starlets. But at this point in my life, I don't think I'm going to change horses in midstream. So America's 100 largest yachts, and they list them. You know who owns the biggest yacht in the world? Where is it? Oh, it's number 7, Musashi, at 288 feet? Oh, sorry. America's 100 largest yacht. Who gets the biggest? Here it is, Rising Sun, 452 feet, built by Lürssen Shipyards in Germany. Octopus at 414 feet. Number 3 is a Le Grand Bleu, 370 foot. Limitless. You know, that's pretty amazing. It's men do these things to show who's bigger, so to speak. I guess if you have unlimited money, there are very few ways to do it. It says, in the yacht spotting world, the most exciting news is often unconfirmed. Blah, 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 blah. All of this combined makes FedShip's launch of Musashi even more intriguing. Hints as to her owner's identity include her Japan-influenced name. Musashi was a 16th century samurai, and her exterior styling. These clues point to Larry Ellison as the owner. Ellison is a known penchant for all things Japanese. So, I mean, does that matter? Whatever. Famous owner, this and that. How do you entertain yourself on a show? I don't understand it. I have a family member who enjoys this, by the way. You see what happens is I've gotten older. It's not that I've gotten more tolerant. I've gotten more of an understanding of people in the sense that it goes back to the 60s, different strokes for different folks. You know what I'm saying? If you enjoy being on a ship with 10 friends, having a good time, God bless you. I don't. I have a large boat, but I handle it alone. To me, the idea of going out is me and the dog. Why? Because I talk for a living. I don't want to go on a boat and talk for 10 days. And the idea of getting off the bow with the launch and going ashore and going to another dinner and seeing other nouveau riche, you know, everyone's showing. Well, all right, maybe if you're in a different state of mind, it's entertaining for a while. But I never wanted the James Bond lifestyle. I don't think, maybe I'm lying to myself. I don't know. Who knows? You know, you got to ask yourself, because as a kid, I loved sports cars. I was fascinated by fast cars and slow women. I mean, I loved sports. You remember that joke? That joke went the other way. But today, I like fast cars, but I drive them slowly. Let's put it to you that way. I've become the guy with the fast car in the middle lane doing 63 and a half miles an hour. I don't even enjoy speeding. What's the point? I mean, the sound of an engine, a great engine like in a Ferrari at 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 RPM is something to behold. But you can do that in the garage with the engine in neutral if you just want to hear the engine making noise. I mean, speed is a very dangerous thing on a regular road, so I tend to stay within the speed limits. So there, we've covered boats and cars. Now what's next? Oh, on the cover of Hemmings Motor News, am I boring you yet? Because you can call about politics, whatever you want. We can talk about Obama's trip, and I mean his travels to India, because that has another connotation in San Francisco, as you can see by the people who run the city. When you talk about their trip, in that case, you're really talking about their trip, but you have to use the word travel to get it right.
She's real fine, my 4-9, my 4-9. Well, I save my pennies and I save my dimes. Giddy up, 4-9. For I knew there would be a time. Giddy up,
so the front cover of Hemmings Motor News caught my eye for one reason. It says Buyer's Guide, and it shows a 1956 Oldsmobile, and how, you know, restoration tools and tails, blah, blah, blah. The first car I ever owned was a 55 Oldsmobile. It was a two-door with a pillar. I was embarrassed that it wasn't like a coupe. Dad bought it for me when I was 17. The first car I ever had, I can remember to this day, the day he brought that car home, a 55 Olds, green, all green. It was like a salesman's car. You know, they had different models. It was for salesmen. It was a two-door, not the coupe, not the fancy one. And he brought it home. I'll never forget as long as I live. Rainy night, like a light rain. Let's see, what age it must have been, in the springtime, light rain. And I remember looking out the window of our little house in Queens, New York, at that car, sitting there in the rain. It was the most beautiful car I'd ever seen in the world. It was stunningly attractive, my first car.
Nothing can catch her, nothing can touch my 409.
So, what do you want me to say? First loves, first car, first alcohol, first woman, first sewer plant, whatever.
Savage.